Running your own business can feel isolating, but you don't have to figure it all out alone. Join a free guest session inside the Smashing the Plateau community to get fresh ideas and real solutions to your biggest business challenge. Spots are limited. Reserve yours now at smashingtheplateau.com/guest. That's smashingtheplateau.com/guest.
The companies that adopt these tools will move faster than their competition, and they will move faster than new startup entrants. And like all of the tools coming...
Today's guest is Jim Morris, a Silicon Valley founder turned product management coach with over 2 decades of experience. In this episode, we explore the evolving landscape of product development in an era of rapid technological change. Jim shares insights on the essential traits that drive success in building products, how modern tools are transforming the discovery process, and why the companies that thrive will be those that fundamentally reimagine how they operate internally. We also discuss the journey of career transformation and what it takes to build a sustainable consulting practice around your unique expertise. If you're navigating the complexities of product development or considering your own professional evolution, this conversation offers valuable perspective on finding clarity amid constant change. Now let's welcome Jim Morris. Jim coaches product management in startups, growth stage companies, and Fortune 100s. He's a Silicon Valley founder with over 2 decades of experience, including an IPO and a buyout. These days, he coaches product leaders and teams to find product market fit and accelerate growth across a variety of industries and business models. Jim graduated from Stanford University with a BS in computer science and currently lectures at both Stanford and University of California, Berkeley in product management. Jim, welcome back to the show.
Thanks, David. Great to be here.
Yeah, it's great to have you on again. So it's been a few years since you were on, but you know, maybe we could just hear a little bit about your career journey and maybe an update over the last few years in particular.
Sure. So I started my career with about 20 years of building products and a couple of different companies. And that taught me a lot about getting to market and trying to find the right way to build a product. But after 20 years of building products, I decided to become a coach. And I think I wanted to take that understanding and experience I had and help other companies navigate this complicated area. And it's getting easier and easier to build products. The advent of AI is just the latest version of making it easier. But we still have a tendency to build the first thing that comes to mind. So my sort of passion is to help people find the right product to build, right? And what are the processes? What are the education steps? What are the ways that teams can work with their customers to figure this out? How can they use AI to make this process easier and yield better results? So it's, yeah, I think that's been the main focus of my coaching journey, is to help people find the right product to build.
Yeah. And how much of what you do now is technical versus using some other kind of skill set?
Very little technical. I know leaving behind engineering was, I would say it was a lot of mixed feelings. I love building things, but this is much more of a people job. And my product is people, really. It's helping them learn new skills, work with their colleagues, all towards this goal of finding the right product and or with leaders, building a better organization that can self-heal, self-learn, and on a more regular basis, put out better products, more innovative products. So it's much less technical, though the world is becoming a more technical place. And so my deep roots in engineering helped me work with a lot of these more complicated products in more technical industries, where it's not just a user interface that consumers are integrating with and working with. These might be API layers inside of a company for internal tools. These might be using AI models to make some kind of experience and helping the teams create the right experiment as fast as possible, helping them cut the right corners. I do rely on some of my technical expertise there, but yeah, most of it is people skills and the process skills and the experience working with my clients that I bring to each coaching engagement.
Yeah. And in your engagements, what would you say is the kind of the mix of skills that are needed for the company to be able to create, because the whole idea is to create profitability. Yes, using products to solve customer problems, but in the end, we're talking about businesses that need to be profitable. So what would you say would be maybe the mix of what they need internally, technical skills, people skills, and process skills to be as profitable as possible and as quickly as possible?
Yeah, I mean, this technology does serve multiple purposes. The first is to solve the customer problem. The second, of course, is to do that to the benefit of the business. And really, the skills go from being detail-oriented, because we are dealing with tech products, to being very holistic, which is how and where does this product make profit? Where does it work for the company so that we're legally compliant? I work in a lot of regulated spaces. So the skills are a combination of hard skills and soft skills. As the technology gets easier to use, the soft skills actually get a little bit more important. So how do you collaborate, right? How do you work with the team in the best possible way to get your outcome? How do you even set these outcomes? So I think there's a little bit of like curiosity about how it's all working. So I always tell people curiosity and ambition are probably the two most important, I would say, traits to have if you're a technologist.
Interesting.
The curiosity allows you to move into spaces you maybe didn't think were possible, or maybe hadn't shown promise before, but the technology is new. And the ambition is to push through all the barriers that you encounter. You know, is it really a legal barrier or not? Well, you've got to work that out with your general counsel. Is it a technological barrier or not? You've got to work that out with your engineering counterparts. Does this fit our design system and the way it's supposed to build? You've got to work that out with your designers. At the leadership levels, you're thinking about how to navigate the company's dependencies and the structure of your teams while still accomplishing your goals. And you've got to push the envelope so that if you're in a larger company, you may have success now, but how do you maintain that success? You still need that curiosity and that ambition to push through any of that cultural, structural barriers that come up. So yeah, I think, yes, there's a detail orientation that people need. They certainly need these two traits of curiosity and ambition. And then even though we're in an AI era where one person can do more than just their role, we still accomplish things very collaboratively. So looking at who your colleagues are, whether it's an engineering leader, if you're a leader, or if it's someone in sales and marketing, because you're going to market with this product. Yeah, it's pretty wide and varied for product management. You need to hit on a lot of different areas of your personality and your skill set.
Yeah, it's pretty remarkable. So I'm curious to know, how much were you aware in your formal training and maybe what you learned on the job early on? How much were you aware of the importance of curiosity and ambition for somebody who is primarily a technical problem solver?
I myself happen to be a very sort of eclectic personality. So I love to do all the things. And so I'm well suited for product management, even though I started in engineering. My sense is, as I was an operator and a doer for 20 years, I knew these things, but didn't have labels for them and couldn't quantify them. As a coach, what I've seen with hundreds of clients is these things kind of, just through statistics, kind of bear themselves out, right? Which teams are successful? Which teams can, you know, like you said, achieve the profitability, increase revenue, save cost, increase customer satisfaction? Which of these teams are successful using these techniques? Which of these teams struggle? Because the technique is just a tool, right? You need to apply it. You need to figure out exactly how it adapts to your product. And that, the curiosity, the ambition, the detail orientation, the ability to be holistic, I find these to be the beginning of success. Of course, hard work's always at the middle of success. But success is when you figure out you've accomplished your goals. But before the hard work, you need to have some of this, just like I said, these personality traits and this ability to kind of learn new ways of working.
Yeah. And then what's the benefit of having somebody who is a coach who's dedicated to improving this whole product management process versus just trying to do this on your own internally?
Yep. When I'm talking to leaders in companies, they're often too busy to coach their employees on skill development. They're often too busy to coach them on their day-to-day work. So leaders in companies are doing managing, hiring, firing, salary setting. They're doing leading, trying to set vision, trying to point the company in the right direction. But actually coaching their employees, they've had much less time. Companies are more lean these days. They're doing more with less. So where I slot in is to help them develop their workforce, develop these teams in the interest of the business. And then, of course, as I develop the teams, getting them aligned and developing their leaders. And there's often multiple levels of leaders trying to understand the new way to work. And so as I coach through these different levels of the org, I'm able to provide this service that folks aren't able to do on their own. And it's a craft. Like, coaching is a thing. It's a place, it's a learned skill. Some of us, you know, we've spent a lot of time figuring out what's the best way to coach certain skills. What's the best way to coach people from their starting point to an end point? And a lot of folks who are in management got promoted there by being fantastic at their craft. But their craft is usually not coaching. It's building something. It's designing something. It's planning something. And so as an expert at the craft of coaching, I'm able to really focus on people as the product and really focus on their teams so that when I'm gone, they've got this repeatable behavior that got this culture change. So that's the benefit of an outsider is that ability to do something they're not doing. And then also to build up the skills of being an expert, this coaching aspect, which is not naturally trained when people become managers.
Right. Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. So Jim, earlier on, you mentioned that there are things that are going on in our world, perhaps due to technology, that are creating new challenges. I'm wondering sort of where you see your skill set being most applicable to what may be coming down the pike in the next, let's say, 1 to 5 years, and what you might be most excited about, where you're headed as a product coach.
For me, what I see is these tools providing, they're reducing the friction of finding the right product, right? So if I've got a variety of steps I want to take, some of them might be creating a prototype to interview users, to manifest an idea quickly so I can see if it's valuable or not. With the new set of tools out there, AI prototyping tools, vibe coding tools, I can see how these things can be built in hours instead of days or weeks, and they can be done by a variety of people on the team. So sometimes, usually a designer is making these. If you don't have that role on your team, product manager, engineer, data scientist, they can manifest an idea into something that is an experience that you can test with users. So this reduction in friction means that teams are going to go from idea to validation or discarding an idea that's not worth working on much quicker. So they should be able to go through their idea backlog, find the winners, discard the less likely to be winners, and really be focusing on the right product sooner. For leaders, it's the expectation that their team is working on more high quality products than they were before by using these tools, whether it's having the team bounce ideas off of the AI tools as a thought partner, whether it's more quickly creating interview scripts so that when they come across a user, they've got high quality questions to talk about, whether it's these prototypes. There's also a lot of productivity enhancements coming down the road for product managers and engineers and leaders. Engineers for sure, I meant designers. These productivity enhancements should allow them to do less of that kind of drudgery work and really focus on what the AIs don't do as well, which is creating new intellectual property, right? They're not necessarily inventing anything right now. And so we can let these tools, like we have with computers for decades, do more of the drudgery work while we spend our time on this really hard task of finding the right product, creating the best organization to find the right product, right? So everything I'm doing, I'm considering at the team level and at the organization level. Right. So I do see the new tools as a way to create efficiency, which then opens up time to figure out this question about the right product. And then, of course, actually just helps you manifest some of the ideas you've got more quickly.
What do you see as some of the exciting opportunities for companies going forward if they're able to find the right product as quickly as possible?
when they find the right product more quickly, what they can do is get into market more quickly. Because often, even if you get that product developed, you still need to work with the market to see if it's actually going to work, right? We gather evidence in our early stages of product development. But once that product hits the market, that's where we see if it's providing that real value. Do people use it? Are they still using it later on? Is it generating the revenue for the company? So these tools can help with analyzing. So you can chat with your database more than just learn these SQL tools of looking up data. So I feel like access to data will be easier for most of my teams. And that's where you figure out whether you've made that positive impact. The companies that adopt these tools will move faster than their competition, and they will move faster than new startup entrants. And like all of the tools coming, technologies before them, whether it was cloud or mobile, or the use of data as a decision-making assistant, the companies that are new to the market will be hungrier, and they will be using all these tools. So if the larger companies can get their employees access to high-quality tools, not just the free tool that comes with the other tools they have, they will be able to compete. The companies that cut corners and expect AI to provide great productivity enhancements, but only give their employees access to the free tools or the ones that are bundled, should not really expect that kind of, I would say, step function jump, that exponential jump in productivity. I just spoke with somebody who's in engineering describing a productivity enhancement of something like 2,500%. It's hard to imagine. And this person was wondering whether the rest of the organization can keep up. Can product design, can the business keep up with what's happening in engineering? And it's a little trickier. The engineers are directly talking to the machine when they write code. And so this is helping them do that. In the product and design and management leadership areas, we are people talking to people. And we don't do this one activity coding 4 to 8 hours a day. We do a lot of different activities. And so where to apply the automation, where to apply the AI experiences is still happening. People are still figuring this out.
Yeah, thanks for sharing that. Because it seems like we're at a crossroads in our world because of AI and the rapid pace of technological change. There are so many things that are changing so fast that, as you mentioned, it's hard to keep up. And figuring out how to shift and transform, particularly an existing company with all these things coming at you while running the company, can be super challenging.
Yeah. People who make products and technology and release them into the world, the laws of physics still apply. If your product is garbage, no one will use it. And so the ability to make products faster doesn't necessarily mean you're going to win, because you could be flooding the market, you could be reducing the quality of your brand. And so the rules of testing it with customers, understanding what the market wants, watching the metrics, all these concepts still apply. Now, internally, how you do things as a company, this is where I see the biggest shift, right? So all of us are using these productivity tools of email and Slack or Teams, spreadsheets. We're going through these various steps of, I'm going to write things down to present this to a group. I've got slides. And some of these processes will be blown up and replaced with much more efficient processes. Some roles will no longer exist. Some roles will be combined in the pursuit of making the right product, of developing an organization that makes great products. So I think it's the inside of a company and how you do things that's going to be the massive competitive difference. And the companies that are trying to plan a year in advance and they're locking up resources and they're trying to predict the future and they're not using evidence, any kind of data, these are the type of companies that are open to be disrupted. Whereas the companies that are really doing continuous planning, continuous discovery, continuous delivery, they're going to be able to use these AI tools internally to move faster and learn faster. And so these fast learning companies, if I'm a leader, I'm thinking, well, I'm no longer creating products myself. As a leader, I'm trying to think about how fast my teams are learning. And if they're learning more quickly, then I've got a chance of putting out the right product more quickly. So I think it's on the inside where companies need to disrupt how they currently do things, be more reactive to the market, use these tools that allow them to move faster, but still regard sacred the final thing they're putting into customer hands. Because I'm not going to use a product because it's got AI in it. I'm going to use a product because it's great for me. Mm-hmm. That may come with AI. That may come with like a a map. It may come with other types of automation in it, whether it's a business product, a doctor practice or electronic health record system, or I'm a consumer product. Those rules of physics, the laws of physics still apply. But inside a company, I really think these technologies will be disruptive. And from the leadership level, it's about rethinking how you make decisions and how you operate to allow for this to happen.
Yeah. It's basic human nature. You're going to use what works for you.
Yeah. It's a ruthless, relentless process of selecting and discarding the things on my iPhone homepage, right? The first page of my apps. And if I don't use it, it gets moved off. And I go through quite a bit of apps trying to find ones that are useful, just in a personal sense. In the business sense, companies are a little bit slower since they tend to sign longer term contracts with their technology providers. But the process of evolution will happen there.
Yeah. So, Jim, you've done such a great job of kind of tapping into what needs to transform with your clients and being able to guide them through it. I see that you've done a phenomenal job with your own career of creating transformation by combining your technical background, your people skills, your process skills. What advice might you share for other professionals, particularly people who want to start their own business like you have, in figuring out how to combine your unique skills and create a viable business around it?
I think being open-minded as to where your value in the market is number one. So when I started, I really wanted to pay attention to what people needed. And I looked inside with the skills I had, and I looked at what the market wanted, and I said, well, okay, which of these skills do I need to emphasize and develop? And that's where I started down the road of product discovery. As I've worked to be able to have product discovery be effective and in my coaching engagements to really work at the team level, I've come into contact with these other barriers where in the organization, the leadership doesn't operate this way, or the CEO and the executive team has not set up the company for success. And so I'm looking deep inside, like, what are the skills that I have? What are the things that I've learned that can help these parts of the organization adapt? So as you're thinking about your career, it's about the market you've got access to. So sometimes we don't have the ability to reach into certain markets. We don't have connections there. We don't have the marketing ability. But in the market we've got access to, what are the things that folks need? How can I develop that in myself? And I see a lot of other speakers. I interact with a lot of our other coaches. I've increased my surface area from college students to startups with no funding to startups with funding, all the way up to these, like, you know, Fortune 25 or Fortune 50 companies. And they all have their own sets of pros and cons. But I see how they do the same thing at these different phases in their life. And exposing myself to all the phases of my business was useful in order to understand where my knowledge started and where it ended and where I had gaps. And I think as an outside consultant, bringing the outside world into companies is incredibly valuable. So I think that surface area of your understanding is really important. Mm. So matching the market, increasing your surface area of understanding by attending talks, meeting people, a lot of legwork, networking. There's a focus on what does this person need and how can I provide that to them? And what are the different ways? What's the optionality that I can give them to achieve their goals? Because there isn't one way to do everything, especially in business management, decision-making, product management, things like that. And so that surface area allows me to provide optionality. I think following the market, tapping into what you're successful at, what you think you can provide into that market. And then really the key way to improve for me was surveying my clients after workshops, after coaching engagements, after leadership engagements, what worked, what didn't work, and getting a numerical number out of that, and then getting some qualitative feedback on that. And it's really hard to read because listening to yourself, your voice can be hard, but also getting feedback is tough. But I can see from 10 years ago to now, the massive difference that looking at my feedback has done, changing how I do things, changing the material, changing my approach. So constant surveying, that reflection process has been invaluable. So if you can do the stuff inside the market that people want and then work on yourself, you know, that's how I've gotten to this level.
I think that's really great advice. And in addition to all the work that you've done with your market, You've also been a member of the Smashing the Plateau community for a while. And I'm curious to know how tapping into the peer relationships have also enhanced your transformation.
I mean, one, it's the regularity of subjecting yourself to feedback from others, like I said before. So you present something and your peers give you feedback. So, and they don't have to be in my line of business, right? They, and that's the nice thing about Smashing the Plateau is the folks from the different lines of businesses, different industries. So I appreciate their perspectives because in the end, if I'm using too much jargon, if I am too deep in my own area, then I'm not necessarily going to be that beneficial to folks. And so I think having the people to bounce ideas off of, having them be from different backgrounds helps kind of round out my thinking. And, you know, people that are, you know, on their own building their own businesses. I mean, there's just a, there's a bit of this struggle, and having folks to just identify with the struggle is nice, because I don't have colleagues anymore as a solopreneur. And that regular touch point with quote unquote colleagues, man, it makes a big difference for me.
Yeah. Thanks for sharing that. Is there anything else you want to mention that I haven't asked before we talk about how people can access any of your resources or get in touch with you?
Yeah, I think what I see in the market is a lot of turmoil. Some of it is hype and some of it is real. And my goal is to really help people through this turmoil. I've embraced all of these tools myself. I'm in communities where these tools are being used. And so I feel for people as they learn new technologies. As a former engineer, always engineer, the constant demand to learn the newest tech stack, the newest programming language, the newest technology has always been a part of my career. We've always had this FOMO, this fear of missing out on the latest thing. And we've always been too busy to rapidly adopt the next thing. And we've also been taught that sometimes we adopt things and they don't end up being the thing, right? So some technologies end up being the Neanderthal technology. And I don't believe that is the case with AI. I do think that some form of AI is going to be embedded in our productivity and our experiences. And helping people work through from cold start to high performance using these tools is a goal of mine this year, and it will be for next year. And so I think it's in the non-engineering parts of the tech world, leadership, product management, design, it's still early days. So I want people to feel comfortable that they, if they haven't started, it's not too late. And if they have started and there are people who are more advanced than them, then that's okay. There is a vanguard of this, but there are plenty of tools and methodologies they can apply now to provide efficiency and productivity inside their groups. So yeah, I just want to, you know, help people feel a little bit better about where they're at and give them that encouragement to keep trying, keep playing with these tools, keep adopting them, give your teams great access to these tools so that they can do this. And through that kind of curiosity and ambition, they'll get to concepts that work for their company that provide these benefits that everybody talks about getting that honestly not everybody's getting right now. So yeah, just want to give people that encouragement and that sort of positive feeling like you're going to get there. And that's a lot of what I help people do.
Yeah, no, it's good to hear. So finally, how can people learn more about you, get in touch with you, or access any resources that you have?
Yeah. So productdiscoverygroup.com is my website. There's a contact link there. That's definitely the easiest way. You can also reach me through LinkedIn. You can look me up there. Those are the two main places.
Great. Thank you so much. So, Jim, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to join us again on Smashing the Plateau. Give us an update. You're in a field where there's a lot going on right now. And we could have talked a lot more, but yeah, thank you for sharing what you did. My guest today has been the founder of Product Discovery Group, Jim Morris. Thank you, Jim, for joining us.
Thank you, David. Thanks for having me speak to your community. Really appreciate it.
Running your own business can feel isolating. That's why we created Smash Through Your Business Roadblocks, a live interactive session where experienced professionals bring real challenges and work through them together using the Smash framework. It's your chance to experience the Smashing the Plateau community a space where corporate refugees support one another to keep moving forward. You'll leave with fresh momentum, clarity, and maybe even a few new allies in your corner. Guest spots are limited, so grab yours now at smashingtheplateau.com/guest. That's smashingtheplateau.com/guest.